Hello and welcome everyone to our MicroCap conference. My name is Stefan Guillaume. I'm pleased to host CDS Pharmaceutical, ticker CTXR. And with us this morning for management CEO Leonard Mazur, we will have a total of 30 minutes. We strongly encourage your participation. So if you would like to submit a question, please type it into the Q&A box at the bottom of your screen, and we will do our best to address it in the time that we have. So with no further delay, the floor is yours.
Bob, thank you very much for the introduction. And first of all, I do want to thank everybody that's participating on this call with me. I want to thank you for taking the time out from your busy schedules to learn more about our company. So CTX Pharmaceutical, our symbol is CTXR. And as I will be making some forward-looking statements during the course of this presentation, what I strongly advise everyone is to consult, number one, our website, CitiusPharma.com, for all the up-to-date information about the company. Along in tandem with that, you should consult SEC.gov, the Securities and Exchange Commission website, for all of our filings. There, everything is there, totally listed out for everyone. So an informed investor is, of course, always the best type of investor. So with that, just to give you some highlights about the company. So what's really notable about CTX is that it's the nature of our portfolio. Our portfolio is a very late stage portfolio, late stage meaning in terms of where our drugs are in the FDA pipeline. So at the moment, our lead drug is Lymphir, which is a cancer drug for a very rare cancer called cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. It's an IL-2 diphtheria toxin fusion protein, and it has a filing that's been submitted to the FDA known as a BLA. That filing has been responded to. The FDA came back to us and gave us something known as a complete response letter, where they identified one area, one topic, basically, that I'll cover later that has to be addressed. Minaloc is really the very first compound that we worked with, started the company on. It's an antibiotic lock solution. The potential for this drug is significant because of the fact that once it's approved, it would be the one and only FDA-approved product to salvage infected central venous catheters that are caused primarily of something known as CLABSI or CURBSI, central line associated bloodstream infections. Minaloc is in phase three. In fact, it's at the very end of phase three, and we will be completing that trial shortly. Halo-Lido, which is a hemorrhoid drug, again, also has a unique status in that once it receives approval, it would be the first and only FDA-approved prescription treatment for the treatment of hemorrhoids. We've completed a phase 2B trial there. We're in the process of getting ready to sit down with the FDA and review that trial along with work out a phase 3 protocol. The market segments that we serve are significant. The cutaneous T-cell lymphoma market is $300 to $400 million. It's a smaller market because it's a small, very small number of patients. The number of patients here is somewhere around 3,000 annually. There are two primary competitors in that market segment. And we think the potential for this drug is significant in peripheral T-cell lymphoma. It's a much larger market segment, along with immuno and oncology combinations that we'll discuss. The market for Minaloc, which would be categorized as the CURBSI, CLABSI market. CURBSI is catheter-related bloodstream infections. That is somewhere around almost $2 billion, $1.8 billion. Our best estimates are that about half of that would be here in the United States, half would be outside the United States. Again, we would be the only ones competing in this market. There would be no other competitors. The prescription hemorrhoid market since there are no FDA-approved RX treatments, and this would be the very first one if and when it does get approved, the potential for it is significant. It's probably more than anything else that we have in our portfolio at this point. So the company's healthy. We have $33 million cash as of June 30th with a runway through August of 24. We did a $15 million offering back in May. We'll talk about that complete response letter. What I want to highlight for everybody here is the fact that this is one of the few companies that you'll ever go to a presentation of this type that you'll hear this, and that is that management has put their own money into the company, not in stock options, but side by side with investors and invested directly into the company. I have $22.5 million. The other co-founder of the company, Byron Halubiak, who's our vice chair, he has $4 million invested. That investment has been made by us as a vote of confidence by us in the company and in the portfolio that we have, in a belief that that we have drugs that are of significant potential and will be approved by the FDA. So we've got several value driving events coming up. One is of course the resubmission of Lymphir, which is planned for the early part of 2024. And then we have the completion of the phase 3 trial for Mino-Lok. We expect to have a top line data readout on that in the first half of 24. So this is our management team. Sometimes people have probably heard me refer to these pictures as our mugshots. Most every investor probably knows about my background and Myron's background. I just want to be able to highlight some of the other people. About 2 years ago, two and a half years ago, we brought on board Dr. Myron Tschutchman as our chief medical officer. Dr. Tschutchman is truly I consider him to be a global KOL in a sense that he spent 23 years as the chief of lymphoma at Roswell Park in Buffalo, a well-known cancer treatment center. He published while he was there 180 papers. And after 23 years, he went and switched to industry, joined Celgene as the vice president in charge of global research in lymphoma myeloma. And when Bristol-Myers acquired Celgene, he felt that he could play a stronger role in a smaller company, and we were fortunate to be able to recruit him in. At the same time, when we added Lymphir to our portfolio, we did expand our staff, and the staff members that we brought on board, looking down at the bottom there, you'll see Dr. Kelly Creighton. He's our EVP for CMC, responsible for all manufacturing issues as they relate to the FDA and our filings and our production of our drugs. Catherine Kessler, who's our EVP in charge of regulatory affairs and dealing with the FDA. And then Nick Berlew, who's EVP for quality assurance. It was important for us to bring this caliber of individual into the company because of the complexities associated with filing with the Food and Drug Administration and then shepherding those filings through the agency and having competent and very professional people on our staff to be able to take that through the process. So I would like to highlight for everybody that we are not a company of, we don't have management training programs, we don't have internships, we don't have trainees, none of that. Every person that's in our company is a complete and total professional with great experience in their area and in their areas of expertise. So some of the milestones and what we have coming ahead, I'm a great believer in really discussing what lies ahead. What's past is past, but nevertheless, so Lymphir, as we indicated, We'll have an early 2024, which means somewhere in January or around there, we'll be resubmitting on a complete response letter that we received from the FDA. For those of you that may not know about that procedure, what happens here is when you receive a complete response letter, what that means is that the FDA has identified something in your filing that they think still has to be submitted. So in our case, what occurred is we had a manufacturing test on a final finished product that passed, but it wasn't, the validation of it was not complete. And the validation was going to run beyond that date, the PDUFA date, as it's known, that the FDA was giving us for an approval. So the FDA, most of what's in that complete response letter is in connection with the fact that that validation had to be completed. We responded back. The FDA has accepted our response. We're in the process of completing that validation procedure. So we don't expect any issues on that, and we think that we'll be able to submit that satisfactorily. Once that submission goes in, the FDA has 2 weeks to respond back to you, and they'll tell you whether or not at that time, whether they give you a new approval date that's 2 months hence after that resubmission or 6 months hence. So at this point, we're planning for a launch of the drug, Lymphir, somewhere in the late summer, probably it'll be more like late August or early September, somewhere in that time frame. Mino-Lok, which we've is an event-driven trial, has 92 required events. We're almost there. We're just about at the very end. We expanded our trial to India to be able to expedite everything, and we expect to be announcing shortly when the trial is concluded. And at that point, we'll have top line results anticipated somewhere in the first half of 2024. And after that, we'll submit the data and go to the agency. Halo Lido, we'd completed a phase 2B trial in April. We've assembled all the data and are finishing up assembling of all the data and everything that we need to submit to the agency. We expect to have somewhere in the month of January a end of phase 2B meeting and a phase 3 discussion about what the protocol will look like for a phase 3 trial. As I've indicated to everybody, our objective for this product is to monetize it for our shareholders. So meaning that once we get some solid data and we get data in here that we think is of the quality that would be of interest to big pharma or mid-sized pharma partner, we would seek to either out-license or sell off that drug and provide the proceeds of that to the shareholders. So with that, let me cover Mino-Lok for you, our antibiotic lock solution. So this has to deal with infected central venous catheters. So central venous catheters are catheters that are implanted surgically in subclavically, which is around the collarbone area. It gets threaded to the heart, to the superior vena cava, and they're a lifeline. Most of the long-term catheters are in cancer patients. So so they deliver chemo, they deliver meds, they deliver nutrition, everything and anything that is keeping that patient healthier. So the problem is that these catheters can get infected. When they get infected, you can die. So the mortality morbidity rate is 12 to 25%. About 500,000 of these infections occur out of the 4 million central venous, long-term central venous catheters. So the challenges that are there to remove that, the only standard of care today is to remove the catheter and replace it with a new catheter. So, for example, what can happen would be that the catheter basically gets surgically removed, and then sometimes in certain cases, the new catheter gets placed down in the groin area, gets threaded back up to the superior vena cava again. And along the way, there can be thrombotic and mechanical and infectious complications. It can lead to significant interruptions in the flow of the IV treatment for the patient. So the option with our drug is to be able to use Mino-Lok, which is a solution, and I should highlight this, it does not go into man, it does not go into the body. So what will happen will be that the solution gets injected directly into that catheter. The nurse is the one that does this. The nurse will come in, inject it, locks the catheter so it does not go, the solution itself will not go into the body, and comes in after 2 hours, gets aspirated out, and then comes back in and does it again for the next 5 to 7 days. At the end of that time frame, that catheter is completely sterilized and clean of any bacteria that may be there, including biofilm, which I should really highlight for you, because biofilm is, in essence, bacterial slime that forms on the inner walls of the catheter and the line. The bacteria have a real affinity for plastic, and they like to propagate and grow significantly. So Minilock takes care of all that. And we ran a phase 2B trial at MD Anderson comparing Minilock to a control arm of remove and replace. As you can see, it was 100% effective in salvaging, saving the catheters. None of the patients in the Minilock arm had any complications whatsoever versus an overall complication rate of 18% for the remove and replace arm. So we went to the FDA with this data and received an approval for a clinical trial comparing Minilock solution to an antibiotic lock solution that the hospital, each individual hospital sometimes will mix up their own with the uncertain results. What happens here is in patients that have CLABSI but no longer have any access points for a new catheter, they will have to use a lock solution that is made up at the hospital. I call it a homebrew. This the endpoint for this trial is time to catheter failure. So it's a failure event. There's 92 events. We announced that we're at in the high 80s at this point. So we're very, very close to completion. So we've had three different interim analyses done by an independent monitoring committee that every time they looked at the data when it was unblinded, they were able to look at it. It wasn't available for us. They told us to continue with the trial because we were basically hitting our endpoints. So the FDA also gave us a special status. This was at their suggestion. So what the FDA is doing is it's encouraging firms to develop breakthrough antibiotics. So they have a special status called Qualified Infectious Disease Product. So we received that special status from them. It gives us, knocks down a review time when you submit your application from a normal 12 months to 6 months, and additional also 5 years of market exclusivity, which means that added to the Hatch-Waxman time, that we will have we'll have somewhere between 9 to 10 years of total exclusivity that no generic company can come in and jump your patent. So with that, let me go into Lymphir, which is the drug that we acquired from Dr. Reddy's and Eisai. Basically, the drug had been on the market previously under Eisai. Eisai had an approval for it, and as a condition of their approval, they had agreed to reformulate the drug and remove some unfolded proteins. Had nothing to do with safety. The drug was on the market for about 3 years when Eisai had to make a decision as to that reformulation work, whether or not they should keep the drug on the market to do the reformulation work or not do the reformulation work. So they removed it from the market, did the reformulation work, went back to the FDA and submitted the data. The FDA told them, sorry, but you've got a brand new drug here. You have to do another phase 3 trial with a lead-in trial, which they agreed to. They've been involved with this program from the beginning. This clinical trial has been underway since 2014. I should highlight for you, we acquired the drug in September of 21, December of 2021. The phase 3 trial was, last patient was in. We submitted a BLA application in September of 22. They gave us the July 28th BLA date or PDUFA date. So with that, that brings us up to the present, as I highlighted before, in terms of where we are with this, in that we're now in at the complete response phase. So just so everybody can take a quick look here, at cutaneous T-cell lymphoma, it's an awful disease. It starts out as a dermatological manifestation, with most of the time being treated by dermatologists. But when it enters into that tumor phase, as you can see there, it then becomes the main mainstay for oncologists to treat. More prevalent in men and women, usually in patients in their 50s and 60s. We have a very near-term revenue opportunity here, as I indicated. We'll be launching somewhere in that third quarter of 24. This is an excellent opportunity for us in terms of the market dynamics. We like the fact that it's got a very concentrated prescriber base, a very small number of oncologists here, so it's not going to take a giant sales force with giant expenses to launch this drug. So this drug has a very unique mechanism of action. It targets malignant cells, and very importantly, it eliminates immunosuppressive Tregs, which we're going to highlight for you here shortly. So this is what the market looks like in terms of the competition. Seagen and Kyowa Kirin are the other competitors there. From what we've understand from speaking with oncologists and our own oncologists here on staff, that this will be additive to the market. Since none of these drugs are curative, what will happen here will be that the oncologists will add this on as part of the treatment regimen. There's no one, two, and three in terms of a protocol. They will do everything they can to make that patient comfortable and keep them alive as long as possible. So again, the market, 300 to 400 million. This was the data that got submitted to the FDA for the phase three. As you can see, both the lead-in and the primary study, we had a 36.2% objective response rate. And I'm going to go very quickly now because we're coming down to the end of our time. So these were the side effects, some of them that were associated with this. What I really want to highlight for you is, just several weeks ago, we released some information on a preclinical trial that was done on adding Lymphir to an anti-PD-1 treatment. It was an animal trial. And in that study, what it showed was that the combination of Lymphir and anti-PD-1, and for those of you that don't know what anti-PD-1 is, the most common drug that's identified with anti-PD-1 is Keytruda, the Merck drug that is one of the world's largest sellers right now. What this trial found is that if you combine Lymphir, which has that anti-Treg property to it, it will target the Tregs and deplete them. When that happens in the tumor microenvironment, it enhances the overall efficacy of the PD-1 inhibitor. So what we have underway right now is there's an investigator IND at the University of Minnesota and at the University of Pittsburgh. The one at the University of Pittsburgh is combining Lymphir with Keytruda, and it's studying Keytruda failures as well as some other very serious cancers. It's something that we don't know what the outcome on this is, but the data shows that there is efficacy here. It'll be a whole different scenario for Lymphir in the future in terms of what its potential could be. So we also have the opportunity to expand this into PTCL, which is peripheral T-cell lymphoma. And again, I'll go back real quick in terms of the other investigator IND study is at the University of Minnesota, and that's studying Lymphir combined with CAR-T, another type of therapy that's groundbreaking therapy in cancer treatment. So Halo-Lido is our hemorrhoid drug. I've highlighted pretty much what I've said about that previously, so I'll skip through that. Just to give you a quick summary here, in terms of where we are, as you can see, we have 158.8 million shares outstanding, warrants of 50.9 million. I should add that about 12 million of those warrants are with myself and Myron Lubiak. So at the moment, I'm probably the single largest shareholder, but I should add in here that from the institutional side, that we have 40 million of our shares are held by institutions. Out of that 40 million, about 15 million shares are with index funds. And then out of our total number of shares at the last count, we had something like 17 point something million shares that were where there was short interest. So with that, Stefan, I think that'll bring me to the end of my presentation.
Thank you, Leonard. Looks like we have a few questions in from the audience. We'll try to get to as many as we can. I think the first question is that with such a comprehensive pipeline and potential market size, like where do you see the biggest opportunity? Like any insight regarding like potential time frame? How do you plan on monetizing them?
That's a great question. Thank you. I really appreciate that. So, I think we have we've got great opportunities with each of our three principal drugs. So Lymphir, obviously, if the data turns out that it's positive on combining Lymphir with a PD-1 inhibitor, enhances the efficacy of the PD-1 inhibitor. That's a significant opportunity. I think Mino-Lok itself, upon approval, being the one and only drug of its kind in that market segment, is really significant. I think it has tremendous potential out in the market because it's going to provide a tremendous benefit to patients that receive it. The Halo-Lido drug is a hemorrhoid drug, and as I indicated before, there's nothing on the market for it. So that's a prescription drug, let's put it that way. The over-the-counter side does have preparation H, but they're strictly good for stage one hemorrhoids only, not in the stages that patients go to doctor's office to see treatment for. So from a timing side, Lymphir is the one that's closest in for an approval for us. So we expect to see that in 24, and we're optimistic as to how long it's going to take us to get our filing and everything in place for Mino-Lok. Once we get that top line data look at, we'll know where we are at that point in time. Halo-Lido, we'll have a good idea from the FDA when we meet with them in January as to what that phase 3 protocol is going to look like and what our next steps are going to be with the drug. So hopefully I've answered that question.
Thank you so much. And the second question that I have is like, how optimistic are you in terms of overcoming the FDA approval process? Is there like any regulatory push that could be a tailwind for you?
So I think it's like this. So, you know, the FDA, when you're a biopharma company, you have to learn to live with the FDA. The FDA in reality is your partner. So that's how they're not there to stop you or anything like that. They just want to make sure that the drugs are safe and effective. And we understand that mission well, and we agree with it. So we don't anticipate any major hurdles here in terms of the FDA. I can say this, that I sat in on all the meetings that we had with the FDA when it came to Mino-Lok, and they were very encouraging to us to get this work completed and get this drug approved. So that's about the best comment I could make on it.
All right, so we have about a minute left. So I don't know if you can tell us maybe like, why are you excited about the future of the company?
So that's a question my wife always asks me. So, I'm excited because I think we've got great products that we're working with, the drugs that we have. We feel good. Everybody in the company is very committed. I've got I couldn't ask for a better team of people to work with to bring this across the finish line. And I think as proof of all that is the fact what Myron and I have done and invested personally in the company. So we want a great return for the shareholders of the company, which includes us as well.
Well, thank you so much, Leonard. Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay.
You have a great day.
All right, you too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.